Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Image. I'm Dan Phillips. This program is focused on personal image development. These shows will discuss topics ranging from custom tailoring to business attire to communication and everything in between. Stay tuned. This is The Art of Image. Here in San Francisco. Today is July 24th, 2010. On today's broadcast, we have Parker Geiger on part two of our three-part series. Now, before we begin, I want to introduce Parker Geiger again to give listeners some background on who we are interviewing. Parker Geiger is the president and founder of the Chuva Group. The Chuva Group is an image development center that works with individuals and companies on improving personal presence. Parker Geiger, welcome to show number two, Creating a Professional Image.
Thank you, Dan. Nice to talk to you again.
Before we begin, I do want to thank our listeners for some really great feedback on that we've been getting on the show. So keep the emails and questions coming. One particular email we got from a listener last week concerns the show we did on personal branding. The listener was really frustrated by the idea of having to feel as though she needed to be an expert in social media. What I want to stress about this is that social media is simply a tool, and we are in control of it. It's not in control of us, and we have to only use the tools we're comfortable with. Would you agree with that, Parker?
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. I think what she was trying to say was, you know, she was frustrated. She had been in the same job for 21 years, just got a phone call and said your service is no longer rendered. She's competing with the younger generation. She's 50 years old. You know, that baby boomer side doesn't really – I would say some of the baby boomers are not comfortable with the internet information as well, and some are very comfortable with it. I think the lower end of the baby boomers are more workable with the internet process. I think what she was getting to, and what I read in the email, was that she was very frustrated because it does seem like when the fast-paced society that everybody's got to be the expert. And if you're not number one, you're of no value. And
right.
You hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, it's just a tool. Don't stress yourself out. Like I told her, I said in our emails, in our exchange of emails, I said, I feel like, you know, maybe in 6 months when you get a job, because what happened was she went out and did her own business, and she said, I'm not a business person. She's a right-brain creative photographer, and that's what we even talked about, you know, in the very first question with left brain and right brain. You know, that was the biggest challenge people were having. And so I think she's
right.
Very frustrated as an artist is, how do I run a business and compete with the big boys? And, you know, we recently had a launch back in March. We work with Michael Jackson's personal stylist that did all his personal appearances, did his hair for the magazine covers and the last appearance he had in London announcing the concert. And one of the first things I talked about when we introduced her and working with Michael is that one of the most geniuses at branding was Michael Jackson. But the point I got across to the crowd is that, yes, he touched the world. You know, he brought the world together on many levels, broke many barriers, many records, and brought a lot of people together. But don't think that global. You know, just think in your own family, your own neighborhood, your own universe. Don't let it overwhelm you. Like you said, don't let it control you. You're in control of it. It's just a simple tool. And I think the most frustrating part is maybe in another show we can come up with some really simple steps of what that looks and feels like, because it is very overwhelming. It's become very comprehensive. It's become very complex with Google and search engines and all that. It's just more and more of a hassle.
And they seem to be coming out all the time with a new platform, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we had the XYZ generation. Now I guess we're going to start back all over with the A again in 3 months, and every day it's going to change because the technology is changing the world every single day. And, you know, we are bombarded. I think you have to go within, and the self-awareness we talked about last week, you have to go within. You have to recognize your strengths and your challenges, have somebody to help you balance that out, and don't let it control you. You've got to stay within your own destiny.
Well said.
Thank you.
Now, on to today's program.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start off with the first question.
Okay.
And that is, since our topic today is, you know, how do we create a professional image? First question I have for you, Parker, is what is a professional image?
Well, it's a professional image is, you know, at Shiva Group, we talk about the professional image is the physical look. It's how you dress, your hair, your clothing, accessories, makeup, all of that. A professional presence is the total package. In other words, it's all about how you communicate, interact with other people, how you dress, how you treat people, how you behave, incorporating your personality. So I think it needs... Again, when people are thinking about creating a professional image, again, not getting frustrated, keep it simple, but first make that big distinction. My image is the look. The second part is what's the total package, which is presence, which is what we're going to talk about, I think, at another date. I think what people need to keep in mind when they're creating a professional image is that they need to create a look that represents their position, that represents their company's products and services, one that meets their customers' expectations. With all that said, you have to do it without losing your own sense of identity. You know, 20 years ago, everybody, if you were a banker, you dressed this way. If you were in retail, you dressed this way. I mean, everybody was pretty much cookie cutter. We just basically helped people look professional, whatever that meant for them. But in today's world, business casual and people, their market's changing. I mean, I can go to one client 1 hour and go to another sales call the next hour, and they'd be two totally different environments. So how do I do all of this without losing my own sense of identity? And that's really key. I also think that as you're creating your professional image, you have to think of your image as your brand. Because, you know, when people hear your name, a picture is conjured up in their brain. And what does that image look like? You know, that physical image look like? Does it relate to your products and services and skills and talents? So you really should also think of your image as a leader. Do I look like a leader in my organization? Now, if I may, I'll give you a prime example. I was working with a client yesterday, and she's at a director's level and wants to go to a senior level. But she still comes to work dressed below director level. What I mean by that, and it's a business casual environment, it's in the cable industry, but she dresses, you know, like in khaki pants and a shirt that's kind of a little bit off and not, it doesn't say professional. You got to look at that outfit and say, what does it communicate? So we started replacing some of her old pieces with some new pieces that said, yes, I am a senior VP. I do look like one. I do act like one. And now this represents what I know and how to communicate that.
So you really do want to be in harmony with your job title and position and need to understand what that is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The corporate culture is real key. It's part of the process.
And, you know, realistically, what can we expect to achieve from a polished professional image? You know, we're investing, you know, money and time in creating this image. You know, usually, you know, if you're in the stock market and you do an investment, you expect a return. So What sort of return can we realistically expect from a highly polished professional image in the workplace?
There's a lot of things that come to mind. Number one is respect. You'll gain respect. You'll get recognized as part of the team. If you don't look the part, that says nonverbally a lot of things to other people. It's about advancement. I get calls all the time saying that we want a law firm recently called and said, look, we have one of the most brilliant lawyers as one of our partners, but we cannot take him out to meetings because he dresses poorly. So we have to keep him in the closet when the clients come to the office. You remember we talked last week about the visibility, image, and performance, and how critical visibility was number one? And there's a prime example right there. The visibility is killing him. But on the same token, advancement can also mean that you are looked at quicker as a leader because that's what you represent. So when the opportunity comes up for advancement, you can come into their mind. It increases your trust factor a great deal. It's really the foundation of one's successful potential. And, you know, if you're polished and now you look your best, it gives you that confidence, and it's the confidence that translates into success. And I tell our clients all the time, saying the right thing, doing the right thing, you know, being, you know, using the right language and emotional intelligence, all those things are not going to make you successful. What's going to make you successful is that you're doing everything within your own inner power to be, you know, to be the best you can be, and that translates into the confidence. So I think key, realistically, what it does for someone is it gives confidence. If that was the number one, that's what I would pick.
I see. And so in doing all these things and you know, dressing appropriately for your position, that it's like a snowball effect then. That's going to build on itself. And now, because you are doing that in the right way, you're building an inner confidence that's going to translate even further into probably increased production and in your work, so on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, what are some of the things that most people do not know about in creating a professional image? I mean, there's some hidden secrets there that maybe you could let us in on.
What I've noticed over the years, Dan, is that they don't know where to start. You know, years back, men, before women kind of got in the workplace, men would go to the clothier and get their clothes, and they'd use that gentleman for 20, 30 years because they'd stay at one company. Today, with you know, multimedia and TV and internet and fashion, you know, it's just become, because fashion's become mainstream in the workplace now, especially for the younger generations. And I think the biggest thing is they don't know where to start, and when they start looking at fashion, if you look at fashion, that is not that's not image. You know, there was a gentleman that had one of the TV shows, Makeover for Your Home show, and he was on CNN on one of the programs with an executive coach telling people how to dress. Now, I don't know where there was that disconnect. He was an interior designer. They started telling people how to dress, and I get the fact that he's, you know, making a living. I support that 100%. But the gentleman was there in a charcoal gray pinstripe suit, a red shirt, a red and white striped tie with a white handkerchief. Now, I'm looking at him and thinking, okay, first of all, it didn't even reflect his personality and style or color, to say the least. But people don't dress like that in corporate America. That's fashion. And that's really scary when you've got experts on a station who are not really experts, and there's a misleading there, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he didn't have some good insight and things like that. As a matter of fact, I couldn't even listen to him because I just thought, this is ridiculous. You know, so again, clothing was a barrier for him because it didn't look the part. So where was the credibility there, you see? But I think they have to be really careful. I also think you need to look at fashion. You know, because I have a saying that you can always incorporate fashion into your image, but you cannot incorporate your image into fashion. You know, fashion changes every 6 months. Now, it's important to follow fashion because it keeps you updated. I remember another gentleman I was prepping for. He was going up for the second year for The Apprentice, the Donald Trump show. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had made it through the first year of the second round, and so he made it the second round again the second year. And he really knew he knew where the mistakes were. So I said, well, you know, bring in what you're going to be wearing in your video when you send it in. And it was basically a pair of jeans and this really loud shirt with this polyester cheap-looking jacket that came to look like his grandfather's suit. I'm like, where did you get this? And, you know, I could talk to him like that, you know. And he said, it was on the mannequin in the store. I said, you're telling me in the store this is the outfit they were selling? He said, yeah. I said, see, that's the problem. So you've got to be intelligent, be educated to make those choices, because retailers want to sell. They don't care about your career. They don't care about your destiny. They never ask those questions. I mean, how many times do you go to a retailer and say, I need a suit? They say, what's your size? You know, they don't say, what is the suit for? What kind of work do you do? What kind of look are you trying to create? It's not about that. It's about sales. So the first and foremost is, I think they have to definitely create They need to empower themselves with knowledge so they can make intelligent choices.
Okay. And what are some of the not-so-obvious things we can do to create a professional look, or some of the things that we miss, you know, some of the details we miss in in having that polished look? You know, say we have the right clothing, but let's say something about the clothing may not be correct for us.
Right. I think there's two things. Number one is, for me, is just quality. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go out and spend $10,000 on a suit. You know what I mean? Quality can come in many different levels. So quality is number one, and there's ways of getting great quality at a great price. You know, there's outlet centers. You know, a lot of people don't understand how these outlets can carry designer clothing, and it's real simple. You know, like typically you won't see a Levi's outlet center, typically, because they're not designers. That jean can stay on the shelf for 20 years. But if you're Donna Karan, Versace, you are dictating the future of fashion. So every 6 months, those things have to be taken off the shelf and replaced with the new fashion. That's how that whole thing works. It doesn't mean that because it's in an outlet center that it's already dated. It just walked out of the store yesterday and it's still very current. So you can get quality at a great cost. And if you know what you're looking for, too, even a regular price clothing, depending on the store that you shop in, definitely can just look for quality. And I think the other one that's really critical is I tell people it's fit. You know, men, you walk in the store, you buy a suit, they just start summing you up and they start doing alterations without any questions asked. They don't do that for women. So I have a client who's petite, and it's real important for her to make sure her sleeve lengths are the right length and the pants are the right length. You know, if your look is sloppy, then the perception is that your work is sloppy. If your look is sloppy, your work is sloppy. If your look is dated, then the perception is your work, skills, talents, and your clients, your company's products and services are outdated as well. So I would say quality, I would say fit, and I would say stay updated.
Now, with regards to fit, what are some of the some indications, let's say on a shirt, that would be a bad fit, that you would know, okay, this shirt just isn't fitting me correctly?
Well, a couple of things. One is the if you can put more than three fingers around your collar when it's buttoned, it's too big for men.
Okay.
You know, the rule of thumb is two fingers. They should call it maybe two thumbs since it's the rule of thumb. But it's the two fingers in there. A lot of times what I think a big mistake men make are the too big of a collar. Also, the sleeve length. You know, the sleeve length should fit at the break of the wrist, where the suit jacket would come up just about a, you know, in Europe they do half an inch. I don't like that. It looks kind of shrunk, but I think maybe a quarter of an inch showing. But you got to allow for shrinkage as you do a fit on that, because, you know, natural fibers shrink. So maybe dry clean a couple times, let it shrink, and then have it altered. And for, you know, in fashion, we'll show you wearing really baggy pants is really an attractive look. It's not. It's an ugly look. I don't care if it's fashion or not. It looks sloppy on men and women, you know. So, and I think jackets, if you've got too much of a, if you can pull your jacket out and you've got the, you know, 3 or 4 inches there, it needs to be tailored. You know, it should be tailored to fit the body. And I think one word of caution about fit has nothing to do with the size. You know, these companies, I don't know where they get these sizes. Like my client yesterday, I could put her in an 8 and I could have put her in a 14. That's because different manufacturers they just make up their own sizes now. I believe that sometimes they'll make them look, they'll put a 10 on a 14 just so, because a woman feels better when she's buying a 10 or a 14. You know what I mean? So I think you need to really don't worry about what the label size says. Look in the mirror, see what fits.
And you might want to also, something that I know that I do is try on a fitted shirt and then a regular fitted shirt, too, because a lot of times you'll have extra material around the waist that really doesn't need to be there on a shirt, and it makes it just look so much better if you do have a fitted shirt.
Absolutely, and I used to do the fitted shirt, you know, and then when I started working out and getting wider in the chest and more narrow in the bottom, I have to wear, like, extra larges just because of the chest area, but fortunately, the waist is smaller, right? So I have to have either shirts made or fitted to fit me, because if I buy a fitted shirt, they don't fit, they're too tight, you know. But I think if you have an average size build, you might want to look at a regular, more tailored or fit shirt, because they will fit you much better, absolutely much better.
Now, Parker, are there any tools we can use to help us create a professional image? Any tools out there?
Yeah, there are. You know, I can speak specifically on some of the tools we use, and I think they're systems, some of the same tools that are used by other companies out there. The first one that we do, and we're helping people understand how to develop the professional wardrobe, is really to look at what we call the image concept scale. And that's really to really understand, you know, where does my look fall on this concept scale? So, you know, we've actually created what we call the CPR approach. We have four different looks for professionals. We have a casual, business casual, professional, and executive. So the first thing we do is we help them identify, is your look mostly professional or executive or business casual? In today's world, most employees probably are 80% business casual, 20% professional. Your executive is that real formal corporate look, and that's probably just for CEOs. That's probably, what, 1% of the population. So if we were to say, you know, my wardrobe, my look should be 80% of the time business casual and 20% approachable, then the wardrobe should definitely reflect that. So that really gives a person a point of direction. So casual, for example, would be something more like a factory worker or a manager that works in a factory. You know, you can't even wear ties in certain factories because of, safety issues. You know, there's a machine you're around that can grab that tie and bring you into that machine. So there's a reason why you don't wear a tie in that direction. Then business casual is just a little more, it's dressier, it's long sleeves, it's a little bit more, it might be a sport coat or a blazer with it. Professional is a suit, it could be a skirt, it could be for women, it could be a pantsuit, but it's how you accessorize it. You make it more fashion forward. And then your executive is your typical real conservative, dark navy, charcoal gray, solid blue, gray, white top or blouse with that. So I think the first tool is to look at it and say, okay, what is my environment that I work in? What's the percentage? And to help you do that, we use what we call the CPR approach. Know your circumstances, know your purpose, and know your relationship when building a wardrobe. And that's how we help our clients really zone in on that. So that's the first tool that we use. The other one is on the image concept scale I originally talked about, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being informal and 10 being formal. So let's say that I need to create an image today, I'm going to do a presentation, and it needs to be more on the formal side, so I don't want to be 10, but I'd be a 7, for example. So I'm going to wear a suit. Well, everything else that you wear with that look, from shoes to briefcases to accessories to hair to makeup, should be around that 7 level. I actually call it the 2-point spread. You can go from a 5 and a 6 or an 8 and a 9, but if you go too far above 9 or below 5, then you're starting to create what I call a disconnect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
Okay. So if you've got this look and you're trying to create close to formal at a 7, then everything else should be. It's like a real prime example of how a disconnect is you've got a suit, shirt, tie, and you're wearing tennis shoes. Tennis shoes is 1, the rest of the look is 7. That's a huge disconnect. You see what I mean? But what's so funny is, like, you know, you can do things that are not that large of a gap disconnect, but they have the same impact. People look at that and go, what's wrong with this picture? They don't know what it is, but they feel a little bit uneasy about it subconsciously.
Uh-huh.
It, you know, it may not be the tennis shoe in your face, but there is a tennis shoe there somewhere.
Right. It's more subtle. I mean, it doesn't have to be
much more subtle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
exactly.
I had a question about watches, actually. Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're wearing a suit, and you know you do have an item, an accessory like a watch. Is it leather strap or is it metallic strap?
Well, the most conservative watch for a man, the most conservative, is a black or cordovan color, shiny black leather with a real classic face. That's the most conservative. Now, for women, it's different. A metal band is most conservative for women, where a leather band is much more casual. So what I say is, for most men, is get a watch that's a metal watch that really can go both ways and is most versatile. Now, I've got 7 or 8 watches because I like to collect antique watches. So, I'll interchange them in and out. But what you don't want to do is wear something that's real formal if you're in business casual all the time. And watches can make a look very dramatic. It can make it look very, you know, fashion forward, and that's great. But again, you know, if you're wearing a real high fashion watch with a conservative suit, disconnect there.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So you say that it's the leather strap that is the most conservative then with the, that would be the most appropriate with a suit.
Yes, but the shiny leather, not a matte finish, dull finish leather. It's got to be like a patent leather, you know, like a nice shiny leather like the shoes would be.
Okay. Now, were there any other tools?
There's a couple more. One that is real key, you know, when you're developing a professional image, there's two components. There's the color and there's the style. Those are your two primary ones. Now, we use a color theory system to help people select what wardrobe palette they belong to. There was a company, I don't know if you ever heard of it, called Color Me Beautiful for about 20 years ago. Do you remember that book that that was written by Carol Jackson. Well, I was Carol Jackson's national trainer. That's how I got started in this whole business. And I would do the international beauty shows with her when she was launching her cosmetic line. And, you know, I've just done thousands of people over the years. What I found out is a lot of companies that have theories out there, but they're incorrect theories. So you really want to get into a system that you know is solid. And there's different systems out there that work very well. I now don't use the four seasons. I use the four elements I use four elements: fire, air, earth, and water. And the reason why I do that is because people can relate to those elements. The old theory was the four seasons, like winter, spring, autumn, summer. Well, winter in New York City is totally different than winter in the Bahamas. You see? So when I say water, it pretty much is consistent, or fire, or air, or earth. So knowing your wardrobe palette, and some people are a combination of, is it helps you create colors that harmonize with your natural skin, hair, and eye color. Here's the beauty of having that done. You can reduce your shopping time by 50% and your mistakes by 100%. I mean, you're going to buy a suit, you might as well buy the right color. You're going to buy a tie, you might as well buy the right color. You know, you can wear any color, it's the shade of that color, and that's another myth in the color system. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, I can't wear black because I'm not in that palette, and that's not true. I show people how to wear colors that are not even in your palette. I mean, imagine telling a woman she can't wear black. What is she going to wear to a black tie party? You know?
Yeah. So this is allowing someone to really use some logic when they go around purchasing their wardrobe, rather than just going in there and saying, oh, you know, I kind of like the way that looks, and then buying that and figuring out later on, you know, that doesn't really look right for me.
Exactly. And I can tell you a lot of clients I helped that made those mistakes, but it is logic. And it's a science. It's not a guessing factor. It's all a science. It's all about color theory. But now your palette will help you determine colors for makeup, jewelry, hair accessories. Accessories and hair color as well. You know, so it tells you what parameters to stay within. So if you're going to wear a charcoal gray suit and want a red tie, and you're more earth and fire, which means you have more yellow undertones in your skin and hair and eyes, then you're going to wear more of a tomato or an orange-based color red as opposed to a blue, like apple red.
I see. And this also applies to the type of material that you would purchase also? Is there a reason behind purchasing certain types of materials?
Well, your materials really come in. Your material really comes into your clothing style. Yes and no to that answer. And what I mean by that is, some shinier fabric is going to make the color look different than a matted one. But your texture and your fabric really come down to your style, which is another tool that we use called the personal clothing style profile. You know, there's four basic types. There's classic, natural, dramatic, and romantic. And people can be a blend of those as well. A great example that I use all the time is Michelle Obama. You know, they are trying to make her so classic, like Jackie Onassis. Well, Jackie Onassis was a romantic classic. Okay, she was very tailored. Michelle Obama is much more natural. I've seen Michelle in person. I've seen her, you know, walk and talk. I've seen her clothes that they put her in, and they are dressing her inappropriately. They're putting her in these little sweater sets, which is making her look real, you know, matronly. And and they put her in a natural's like texture. They like things that are more comfortable and more relaxed. And it doesn't mean she can't be formal and still be dressed, you know, for formal occasions. But instead of wearing a high sheen silky black dress, it might be a raw silk to give a little more texture to it, to fit more of her natural style.
I see.
So that's where we get a lot of that from. And another aspect of that class is, of that tool is called Body Metrics, and it's really helping people understand their silhouette. You know, people fall into a category of being a square, a circle, or a combination of those. So if you're real more angular, you know, it's you want to wear things that are more tailored and heavier and tighter weaving of fabrics, where if you're more curved, you wear fabrics that kind of flow with the body more with that. It also helps for it's almost what I call body metrics. It's the science of dress, and it's really understanding, here's my body type. How can I make myself look taller if I want to be taller? Or how can I make myself look shorter if I want to be shorter? You know, if I'm long-waisted, how do I bring my waist up? You know, if I'm short-waisted, how do I bring my waist down? Michelle Obama's very short-waisted, and they consistently put her with high belts and real wide. And if you look at her in her pictures, she's just all body from below. It's very out of balance. So understanding your body type is real key as well.
Yeah, it seems as though there's quite a few things that we should really know about before we purchase anything out there.
Absolutely.
And how about, we mentioned accessories a few moments ago. Anything on rules for accessories?
Yes. Average rule, and again, this is, you know, our theory is science plus art equals style. So I love the name of your show, Art of Image. Scientifically, I can tell you all of this, but artistically, personality, behaviors, and all those play a huge role in that. That's why I can take a set of twins and dress them totally different, because their personalities and their energies are totally different in a lot of different ways. But scientifically speaking, if you're medium to smaller in scale, then your accessories should be medium to smaller in scale. If you're medium to larger in scale, then your accessories should be medium to larger in scale as well. If you're more of the fire earth palette, you don't go more to the gold tones or the warm tones. If you're doing more cooler, like air and water, you go more silver or platinum tones. But the one thing I'd like to say about accessories, particularly for women, a lot of times women want to have that more professional presence when she walks into a room. And a lot of times they may wear small dangling little necklaces or tiny little earrings. If they were to wear larger scale accessories, more of a chunkier necklace or three-dimensional earring, it really gives them more of a presence. It makes them stand out more than if they just come in with like really small detailed accessories. That's probably the biggest mistake women make with accessories.
And that relates to, did you say earrings?
Yes, earrings as well. Yes.
Okay.
Because if you just have, like, imagine if you just come in with little pearls and a little pearl necklace, that just communicates very safe, very classic, boring. Now, it's good for some people, don't get me wrong, but it used to be the safe look, and now it's not, it dates you now, you know, if you think about that. We talk about being in fashion and updated. So the more substantial, now, like, there's a picture I have of Michelle Obama, going back to her, they put on those single-strand pearls, not working. But when they put her in multiple strands and longer and elongated and more dramatic, it works perfect for her.
And any other tools that we could utilize?
Well, I think that, of course, you know, if you get, you know, look for an image consultant. An image consultant can really help you with these issues. You know, like we do a lot of stuff for coaching on the phone and through video, and we can help clients all over the world. You know, they send us pictures, and we do coaching on the phone with them and things like that. But sometimes people want that real hands-on. But I think the most important part of that is you got to know how to qualify an image consultant. You know, really talk to them and find out where's their training, how long they've been doing this, what color system theory do they use. You know, just ask them questions like that. You know, what is a warm color versus a cool color? If they can't answer that, hang up the phone. Because you're going to get in trouble. It's like if you sit down with your hairdresser and they say, you know, you say, I want to do a warm red, and they don't know what that means, you need to get out of that chair right away. I'm not saying being an expert. I'm just saying know the right questions to ask, because that can help you, you know, save a lot of time and headache in the future. So the image consultants can be a great resource. Another resource that I use, I partner with different clothing resources. And the reason why is it builds confidence in my clients. There is, I use Khalil Blase, for example. He does my custom clothing for men. If somebody requests custom clothing, Khalil comes into our studios or I meet him at our client's office, and I help them, you know, pick the colors and styles and textures and all of that with that. And what's great about that is once my clients understand what's right for them, that Khalil can able just stay within those boundaries every time, and they trust that salesperson, you know, and they trust that designer person who really is doing what's right for them, not just selling it. Another line that I use here is called the W line. It's designers out of New York. They have what they call the collection was a higher end line, and then the W line, which is like business casual and to casual clothing. It's sold private appointments in people's homes, which is great because it's private one-on-one. The beauty of me working with that line, I work with Beverly here in Atlanta, Beverly Selby. And, you know, when I have clients and I go see her, she understands my system, and that's all she tries to do is work within that. She doesn't sell clothes. She's selling a wardrobe. The other reason why I like the clothing line is that it's got great quality. I talked about quality being important earlier. And the other really beauty of the line is that it's got the same kind of – they'll use colors through each season so you can keep using it from season to season. So that's why I've selected working with that organization, Worthwear is what the company is called, and utilizing the W line because that's what most of my clients wear. So it helps build my clients' confidence. So I think if a person is out there looking for someone, identify someone that you can that is selling clothing but building wardrobe, and make sure that they're helping you specifically in what your needs are, because they can be a great asset to building a professional image, a great asset.
Okay. Now, in terms of our wardrobe, color is a big factor in it. And is there a manner in which we should use color that would convey professionalism in the best way?
Yeah, you know, if you look at the psychology of color, you know, dark colors are more authoritative and light colors are more approachable. So if you're trying, again, to get back to that image concept scale, and you're trying to be more formal, more conservative, you would definitely wear richer, darker colors. You wouldn't do the bright, you know, pastel colors. But on the other hand, if you're trying to be more approachable, then you would do medium to light colors as well. So, for example, if you want to look that's approachable, but you need to look conservative, you could do like a medium, you know, a navy suit with a blue shirt and a color tie that would be appropriate with blue. Maybe it's a blue and soft gray colors to kind of blend in. But if you're trying to be more authoritative and real conservative, you know, you've got your red tie, your white shirt, and your dark suit. Now, keep in mind that color affects us, you know, in our body. So it affects our autonomic nervous system. So when you see red, it keeps your heartbeat and blood pressure up high, very consistent. Now, yellow might get your attention quicker, but it's up and down in the system. So when fashion says the power tie this year is green, the power tie this year is purple, the power tie this year is yellow, no, there's only one true power tie, and that's red. See, again, that's where fashion plays on it again.
Interesting, because the power tie has been, it's always been yellow.
Okay. Well, if you look at corporate board pictures and CEOs, you're going to see mostly red ties. Mm. You know, okay. And it's very interesting. There was one of our clients is Cox Communications, cable company, and Cox Enterprises, and Cox Chambers, who is she and her sister, you know, own the organization, and they did a picture in their annual report, and all the gentlemen were in their dark colors, you know, but Miss Chambers and her sister, and of course, you know, they just wore, you know, what they wore. They've been in the business for years. They wore more lighter colors with a jacket, but just like a camel color, and you could see the distinction of, you know, who were trying to get that power play and who wasn't. They didn't need to. They owned the company. They're worth billions of dollars. See, they didn't need that power play. They were already power because they owned the business, you see. But the other gentlemen that were there had to represent the organization because they didn't own the business.
Now, Parker, what are some general rules of thumb when it comes to using color in our wardrobe? I mean, some things you definitely, you know, just don't do that, or, yeah, do this. You know, what can we say about that?
You mean in terms of what colors that a person should or should not wear, maybe, or certain
yes.
colors that shouldn't just go together? I would say.
Well, yeah.
But go ahead.
Well, just in general, for us, you know, for our particular skin tone or color.
Well, I think there's some general statements you can make. Again, they're very general. If you're redhead, you shouldn't be wearing grays because you're really warm, and gray is, you know, even the dove gray, which is a little bit warmer, it just washes a person out. It just makes them look very sallow because your skin absorbs or reflects color. So if you're warmer like that and you wear those cool grays, your skin just it just sucks the color right out of you. So redheads should be careful about fuchsia as well. Now, there are some pinks that look good with redheads. But generally speaking, that's one of them. If you are, like, say, jet black hair, if it's silver, real silver color, that's real cool, avoid earth tones around the face because they just make you look so sallow, you know. And if you look at Oprah, what she's done over the last couple years, they're making her back cool again because for years, you know, her hair looked real black and her skin looked real warm. Well, I've seen Oprah in person, and she's not that warm in her skin tone. She's got some yellow there, but she's not that warm. And then I think they did it because of the way the video was of TV. But now with digital video, which I think is cool, if I remember that correctly, you notice now they're making her totally cool. So they're really following her natural tones. Now, there's a difference between being on TV and video and digital as it is being in person every day, you know. But what they did with Oprah, if you just look back at her, they did a dark brown hair color with the red base. And then now they've got her, took the red and gold out, and now they've got her as just a cool black hair, and now she's wearing the pinks and the blues and all the cool colors. So I think there's definitely some do's and don'ts on that. You know, another one, if you're golden blonde hair, maybe some cinnamon or coppery color hair, be careful of wearing silver because it can look real cheap on you. It can look real cheap.
Okay.
Does that answer your question on that?
It does.
Okay.
It gives us some basic guidelines, and that's what we want to give our listeners is some good rules of thumb they can use. It looks like we're running out of time.
Okay.
But I want to give you some time here to let people know how they can contact you if they have further questions about your services and so on.
Okay. They can call my direct office line number, 678-705-2366. Again, that number is 678-705-2366. Or they can send me an email to Parker, P-A-R-K-E-R, at shuvagroup.com. And that's C as in Charlie, H as in Harry, U as in Umbrella, V as in Victor, A as in Apple. And I'd love to hear any comments of the show so it gives us more information to talk about in future shows as well.
Yes, keep those emails coming. We really appreciate that. And if you have questions for us, please email. You can email the show at artofimagetalk@gmail.com.
Great.
Well, I guess that's it for now. And you'll be on the show next week as well. And on that show, the topic is going to be on networking savvy skills. So you want to be sure to listen in on the show for that.
That's great, Dan.
Thanks
Thank you
again.
So much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Parker.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to The Art of Image. The Art of Image has been sponsored by L.T. Bodrix of San Francisco. I'm Dan Phillips. Thanks for listening.